What I'd like to, let's review what we learned last week. Last week, when we talked about a nidah in regard to tefillah in the Beit Torah, and also we talked about nidah with the Sefer Torah, we saw that there was a custom. There was a custom of varying degrees in which women who were menstruants, women who were yidot, and we saw that this was primarily only during the days of the flow, per se, didn't come to shul. Some didn't even make brachot, didn't even touch a holy book. This was a custom which seemed to have been instituted by the women. It just showed up that the codes, or the Rishonim, the period somewhere between the 1000s and the 1500s, described that such a minhag existed. Some places yes, some places no, but there was such a minhag. And then yesterday, last week, we discussed the possible sources for this minhag, where it came from. One source we saw was that the women viewed, and this of course would focus in on the Beit Knesset only, that we know the women didn't come to the Beit Knesset, that a Beit Knesset was like the Beit HaMikdash. Just as a woman who was a menstruant didn't come to the Beit HaMikdash until she finished her flow and went to the mikvah, similarly, women during the period of when they were midot or having their flow wouldn't come to the Beit HaKnesset, which was a Mikdash Ma'at. And this is not so far-fetched, because indeed there are many parallels between the Beit HaMikdash and the Beit HaKnesset. When we discussed Mechitza, we saw that in fact the custom of Mechitza, or the institution of Mechitza, was adopted from from what went on in the Beit HaKnesset, in the Beit HaMikdash, and the Simchat Beit HaYeshiva, or the Masses of the Levim together. But already, as far as this first reason is concerned, Rashi, already in the 1000s, challenges it and says that this doesn't really make sense as the source for the minhag, because if it's a consideration of tumah, the woman who's a menstruant is a tumah for the Beit HaMikdash, therefore for the Beit HaKnesset, says, well, that's one level of tumah, but there's a much more serious level, it's memet. Anybody who's been in contact or in the same house or touched a dead body, we're all tmeimet. And if tmeimet also can't come into the Beit HaMikdash, we're all tmeimet. Essentially, everybody born is a tmeimet because they were born to a mother is a tmeimet. So you're already born tmeimet. So why nobody's machmer tmeimet? You know, because you touched the dead body or touched someone who touched the dead body. So how is it? That doesn't make sense. Furthermore, the custom was not to go into the Beit, HaKnesset only for the 5 days or so of her flow, when she was actually menstruating. And yet the dinim of Tumat Nidah is until she goes to the mikvah, which is the days of her flow and the 7 clean days, or whatever clean days. So it doesn't make any sense that it should have somehow Tumat concept, Tumat HaKnesset. That was the first reason. The second reason given for it was like the stringency of a bound carrier. We know that at the time of the Second Temple, Ezra instituted, as we saw in the discussion, unsuccessfully. But for a while, there was such an institution that a male, and it was not only male, so I said, a male with a seminal emission, whether voluntarily as sexual relations, or involuntarily, a nocturnal emission, was not allowed to daven or say brachot until he went to the mikvah or had tisha kavim, which was 9 measures of water, so she took a good shot. All right, so there was such an institution. And they want to say that just as there was the stringency about a Balkari, a man who had a seminal mission, for that matter, a woman who had a seminal mission. relationship, and then she slept with her husband, and therefore she also ended in sin as a result of sexual relations. These people who were not allowed to do, say tefillot, do brachot, do tilleh. So therefore, similarly, a menstrual emission would be a corollary, and if the women didn't do it till they went to a mishnah. Now this was very quickly challenged because the Mishnah in Brachot explicitly states that a menstruant who has a seminal emission can't say brachot until she goes to the mikvah. The fact that she's a menstruant alone was never a problem. That is, even during the instant time and the period where this concept of Tfilat Ezra, the Tfilat Valkeri, was in effect, it never applied to menstruants. The Mishnah says clearly it doesn't apply to a nidah. It only applied to nidah just before she had been, it was a nidah, had sexual relations with her husband, so that she also had a seminal emission. But it never applied to any other form of emission, only seminal emission, not menstrual flow. So therefore, the Gaon says, this can't be the reason, because it's against the Mishnah. Others want to argue that nowadays, we're not strict about, we essentially said that this custom, this institution of Tfilat Valkeri is not obligatory. Some Hasidim continue to maintain, go to the mikvah after they've had relations with the wife. So the custom, women also had a custom, although it wasn't obligatory. But the other person say it doesn't work because it has no source. It has no, the Mishnah itself says that there's no source. All right, the third reason given. Well, essentially, what is known as Hakriveinu Nala Fechatecha. Would you do this in before the secular government? That is, certainly during the dark period of the Middle Ages, it was women who were menstruants were ostracized from public. They essentially stayed during their period in their homes. They had very little contact with the social world. It was just not considered proper. There was all sorts of beliefs about that a woman who was a menstruant was dangerous, etc. And some say maybe during that period is where the custom began that women wouldn't go to shul because you wouldn't show your face at a public affair, a secular public affair. Why should you go to synagogue? That may have been true in the Dark Middle Ages. It's not true anymore. It's not in the post-game, the modern period, certainly in the 20th century, say, what do you mean? I mean, it's not our problem. It's certain women who are menstruants are not, quote-unquote, socially ostracized. So that can't be the reason. It can't be comparison between secular versus the last reason given, which seems to be the reason which makes the most sense in total, is Mishum Nikiut. That the women did it not because of any tumor consideration, not because of any other consideration, but simply because the feminine hygiene that was available until the end of the 19th, early 20th century was simply not appropriate for coming to shul. That the clothing may have been stained, and certainly during the heavy days of their flow, they felt dirty. They felt that it was improper to show. In fact, we're going to see a few more quotes where they say, "Lo mishum isur, lo mishum kavod." Pasnish, they didn't feel comfortable. They didn't feel comfortable coming to shul. Under this situation. And not because it's usher. Not just because there's anything. They didn't feel it was proper. And then, of course, that makes the most sense why the custom of not coming to shul applied only during the days of her flow. And after all, if it was tuma applies until you go to the mikvah. So that makes sense that during that, the days of her flow, she wouldn't come to shul. All right. We're now on the handout on page 3. And having gone through the possible reasons, I just would like to emphasize for you by as we go through the codifiers of the more modern period, how the codifiers view it. Now you have to understand that the codifiers are a bit of a bind. On the one hand, as the codifiers say over and over again, you will see it again ad nauseum today, this is a custom that has no source. No halakha. On the other hand, it's a custom. And Jews don't throw away customs. You know, the customs, but very often this custom is problematic because the custom stands in the way of fulfilling certain obligations. Right? I mean, if on the one hand, there are communities in which a custom extended even that you wouldn't mention God's name while they were mitzvahs, then they didn't bench. But how could you not bench? You're kind of midolaita to bench. So there's a struggle here, and you're going to see that. I want you to be sensitive to the tension of this struggle. But on the one hand, the women are doing it, it has no source. On the other hand, it's contravening other things that they might be obligated to. Now, yes.
The course you're saying that it has no source, and it actually originated by the women. That someone tells you that he has a headache, take his breath, and he knows what he's talking about. And so women, particularly what you said last week, so fast that it's so different to have a menstrual period for them in about 100 years ago.
That's correct.
Or even less than 100 years ago. And it was with the women, and some of the men you hold they get away, I think you need that or easier. Some women didn't, some women have 10 fingers, some women have 2 left hands, right? So, and then you said there was, you remember you mentioned that there was an army that was spent, which is quite often the case, by some women listen. So they themselves tell that it wasn't perfect.
Yes, I would, but I like this one. The reason why I
would like to bring all of this is we heard and read the women who came from Ethiopia, they lived in a different palace.
It wasn't only in Ethiopia, this is definitely true. There are also records in the Middle Ages. You read records in the Middle Ages when you go up and just moved out of the house. It wasn't, they were really socially ostracized.
Yes. Here, and I say in 1992, I went to be guided from the Mount Eder Shabel, the rabbit team took kids from the surrounding Boston, and in that situation, even then, the women just moved into the shore of the bed, and they were
helping. Yeah, there was a master bedroom, and there was no extra other bed. Yes. All right. We last week we read, let's go through it quickly again, forgive me, but we'll go through it quickly. The Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo, who normally represents the Svardi Psach, okay? Represents the distillation of Svardi Psach. Is there a problem? It's dripping? Okay, good. Represents Svardi Psach, okay. Represents Svardi Psach, okay, in the 1500s. What is the Yosef Karo saying? Okay, for Aleph, Shulchan Aruch, Or HaChaim, Siman Pei Chet, the first one. This is the last halacha in Hilchot Kriyat Shema in Shulchan Aruch. It says, Kol HaTmeim, Korim BaTorah, VeKorim Kriyat Shema UMitpalvim. All those who are Tamei, which refers to a Malkeri, or to a Midah, the Kohen Batorah can read from the Torah, the Kohen Kriyat Shema, and can read Kriyat Shema and Kundan. Now, in Shulchan Aruch Yerdeh, which deals with Hilchot Sefer Torah, what does Rabbi Yosef Karo say there? Kol HaTmeim, Afilu Nidot. So this is in case you had any doubts. Kol HaTmeim, Afilu Nidot, Mutarim Lechoz B'Sefer Torah, Likrot V'Likopo, V'hu shelo yu yedehen metunafot omunutlachot. Provided that they're allowed to read, even though they're menstruating, provided that their hands are not dirty or sorted. Okay, that's the view of Rabbi Yosef Karo. Okay, And skip down to Dal, we skip Gimel for the time being. The Beit Yosef, also the Beit Yosef is the more lengthy commentary of Rabbi Yosef Karo, which he wrote on the tour, from which he digested the Shulchan Aruch writes, Vahashta nowadays Nashi Didan Lo No Dimanat Kulam, the woman go to shul and there's no problems. And now that's the distillation of Svardi opinion. Okay. The fact that nowadays Svardi women are much more strict about this, we'll see, but we'll see. Rabbi Yosef has a title. But you see, because he says, halacha goes by the Shulchan Aruch. He has a problem. Rabbi Yosef has a problem because he always follows the Shulchan Aruch, and the women will resist him. Okay, this is the women are doing it. It's not that the halacha is driving the women, but the women are doing it. Now, again, I must tell you, I'd be completely fair. When the question comes before a posek, and he has to say, can a woman do this or not do this? He will say, what can I do? This is the minute. You have to understand that a posek is bound by the minute, and if the women are doing the minute, if it's innocuous, and since their intention is what they believe is an act of purity, then the poskim are to some extent bound by the minyan. Let's get to it. We're still in the 1500s, yes. Because as far as Rabbi Yosef Karo is concerned, there's no problem. There's no problem. Rabbi Yosef Karo, anything. He says, hold the Sefer Torah, the learning, the go to shul, everything. Rabbi Yosef Karo has no problem.
Right, no, but
is
there
a
difference between
Rabbi
Yosef Karo
the minhag obviously was not at the time of the 1500s. Yosef Karo doesn't mention it. I mean, he knows about it from Rishonim sources, but he seems to say that it doesn't bother him. He doesn't bother him. He says, our minhag nowadays, he says, Hashta Nashi Didan Lo Nog Nima Nafa. They do everything. They go to shul. We're now moving into the Ashkenazi world. We're now in Poland at the same period. And the situation is a little different. Let's see what Rav Moshe Isselish. Rama, the same, and the comment of Rav Yosef Karo says as follows. 4. Yesh katvu, she'en li shan yida b'mei v'yeta. There are those who recorded that a woman during the period of what she sees as a menstrual flow, b'mei v'yeta, l'kanes l'vedek, she'en t'shul, o l'pael, or even daven, or l'askir Hashem, or mention God's name, o l'gav v'sefer, or to touch a holy book. Again, I tell you that again, there's a problem with the translation, whether it means ba-sefer or bis-sefer. Okay, whether it means the Sefer Torah or it means a holy book. Both translations are possible here, it's not clear. Those who say that it's permitted, that's halacha. So he gave you the halacha. What's the halacha? No problem. But during their clean days, they're permissive. They do come to shul, they do everything. And even where they are stringent, even in those cases where they are stringent, in the holidays, and similar situations, where people, massive people come to shul, they go to shul because it costs them tremendous pain. Everybody's going to shul and they're not going. Situation with something on a regular shop. Well, someone will go. And if they don't show up, nobody sees right. But if everybody's going to shul, they're not going to shul because they're having a break. Even in the communities which are stringent, they can go to shul because it causes them pain. Shakom the Tasmin, they end up doing everybody's going and they're staying inside. Now again, so this is a very strange thing. I mean, you don't have a situation you have a minute because you have a little bit of problem with it, then you can set it aside. The answer is very simple. It's not social. It's a chumra ba'alma. The halakha is the first period. bit of a problem.
Something.
You have to understand that what the power of this minhag seems to be even in the eyes of the halacha. Okay, yes, did you want to say? Okay, look, let's read the Gra. So we have the Gaon of Vilna, who we already saw last week was extremely lenient, who himself was of the opinion, he said it very clearly, that somebody holds that menstrual blood is almost like any other blood, and he holds there's no problem whatsoever. But he makes the point, even with this stringent first view, lo katata lo chumr ba'am, it's a simple stringency. Okay? Let's continue down to six. Let's go to seven. Now we're down to Rav Valdenberg. Rav Valdenberg is Baruch Hashem alive and well. He's one of the major Dayanim of the Bet in Yerushalayim. And Rav Valdenberg writes as follows: Hasvarah Rishona. Now this is a very, very interesting tshuva, because there's someone who wanted. It's a standard. There's someone who wanted to prevent women from learning Torah on the grounds that they could menstruate. That's what he wanted to say. So he says, so he really lashes into this guy. But in the process, he discusses us. It's only a simple stringency, and it has no halachic basis. The raya l'chach, and prove that it's a simple stringency. Sharei me'id ha-ramah, v'pshitut, shegam b'medinotenu, shenagut, svarah, shemay, even in his communities, where they were knowing like the stringent position, mikomakom, v'yimei libu now, we have to do the clean days, they were permissive. V'ilu, ha-davar, v'ikar, v'dina, and if this is also because of some neither consideration, ma'efresh yish b'zeh, v'yimei nidah, v'yimei libu, what is it? Clean days, the flow, it makes no logic sense. And I said, brothers, Mamshir Shah Mahaki Vilish was in the son of no one who taught me how to do that. Those who want to make women from the government. Okay, so now we come to the Okay, let's skip down to nine. The Pri Chadash is one of the major pillars of Psak. He's in the 1700s, and he writes as follows: Muchach me'atalmud, proof from the Talmud, u'muska me'aposkim, and it's clear from the codifiers, shenida chayev b'chamer, that a menstruator is obligated to pray. He's saying, you want to be strict, you can't contravene something that the halakha requires you to do. So he says, Anita, even according to the stringent position, she can't say, I'm not going to die. So essentially, he's nullifying part of the custom. Mukhlach me'atam v'muska me'aposim shenida chevel v'padeh. Mi hu zeh, shechol lachlok v'zeh v'leftor nashim v'mei nidatan v'chilam. Now, I'm not going to free women from davening. ולכן חייב כל איש ואיש להזהיר בביתו שלא ימנעו מלהתפלל בימי נדותן. All your daughters, all the women in the house, they got a daven, during the time they have their נדות, והשומע בזה, you listen to me, this is what I said, יישא ברכה מג'ה, what will be blessed by him. וכף החיים, because we're moving now, Kaf HaChaim lived at the early 1900s. Okay. He's a smarty. He lived in Yerushalayim. He wrote a very important work, a sort of a summary work. So essentially, to some extent, it's the smarty, one of the smarty equivalents to the Mishnah Berurah, which is the Ashkenazi. And let's see how he summarized the Kaf HaChaim. Mistimat Givrei Maran Zal B'Shulchan Aruch. Lack of distinctions in the words of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says mutter, it doesn't make any distinction. Nimtza d'midot v'yodot mutarot v'divrei Torah v'gam nir'ot k'tivat ha-sefer Torah, that a woman who's a menstruant can learn Torah, she can look at the writing of the Sefer Torah. We'll see about this custom in a moment, because this turns out to be a very interesting point. You know, when you pick up the Sefer Torah for Hagba, the person who picks up Hagba, if he does it right, turns to the right, turns to the left, so that everybody can see the Ktav. In the Masechet Sofrim, it says that everyone looks at the Ktav. Everyone looks at it. Some people who are, they can try to get close, actually try to read the Ktav. But everybody is supposed to look at the Ktav of the Sefer Torah. It's a way of making the words that the Torah will come up in, that it's not that the person read from the Torah didn't read, it's not reading by a pen, and it's not the heart, it's actually everything's written there. Okay, so he says, and they look at the Ktav of the Sefer Torah, he's referring to during Hanukkah Hagba, B'shash Shemarina told the Am, and they show it to the people, B'lishmo HaParasha Me'ashatz, and you have the parasha from the Shatz, from the one who reads the Torah. By the way, he's a Sfarim, right? So what do they do Hagba? Didn't even know. The Sfarim do Hagba in the beginning, before the Kriya. So therefore he says, they show the Torah and then they read. We Ashkenazim have the custom of, we read and then we do Hagba. So if you look at his wording, it says, V'gam devot ivat, right? Shemar anam, v'lishmoa parasha. He says, that's how it started. They do Hagba, and then they do. Okay. U'bitfilah, u'birkat hamazon, v'kiddush, chayavot benedin. When it comes to davening, when it comes to birkat hamazon, when it comes to kiddush, they're obligated. Ve'inam yecholim leftor atzman. And they can't free themselves because they hold, I'm holding like a string of position. But nevertheless, he says it's proper to warn them. B'shach Adam Shoteg, where they actually feel the blood dripping down, Yafsiqwa Kriya, they should stop davening there. For Gam Lahachlif or Matlik, they could change the Hebrew. Matlik would be a cloth or a towel. Shiei Naki, so it should be clean. B'shach Adfila or Adam. It's a question of cleanliness. Kol Mardesha. Whatever is possible. He says, she should be, then it's possible. Chen yesh lazivan, shelo yikansu b'vet ha-knesset, they shouldn't come into shul. Vein shiadu shishot eidam, when they know that the blood is actually dripping, the pnei ha-kabah. Now it's possible, it's not proper. Not because it's asur, not because there's a tumba problem. The pnei ha-kabah. Yeah. The fact they didn't show up to shul, nobody knew. That they died and didn't die, nobody knew.
Also late 1800s, he lived in the beginning of 1900s. Let's
really what he actually died in the third Mishnah Berurah. How did live until the late 18th? All right, let's read what he says. And now this is Ashkenazi view. Yesh makomot shenoladim hanashim shekol zman shehen bimei nidut kodim zayin nekiyim shalehem einem mitpanalot ulevohot. They don't have a custom, they don't make a fault, they don't have it. V'zeh minhag she'en lo yisod. This is a minhag that has no source. V'afilu b'mekomot she'machmirim, and even in the place where they're stringent. Mikom makom yom alef t'slichot, from the first day of slichot, nechnasim lebet ha'kneset u'mitpalalot. Aval b'medinoteinu, he says, in northern Germany, noagin heter le'olam. Our custom is to be leaned and everything. Umibachot, umipalalot. Umikomakom, lo yistaklu b'sefer Torah v'shah shemagim otah la'olah. There's one message. They wouldn't look at the sefer Torah during Hanukkah. I will show you. Okay? V'nirali, hold on, v'nirali shelo yikansu lebet ha'kvarot al-shiv. And it seems to me that they shouldn't come to the Beit HaKvarot until they go into the Beit. Yes. Now, the fact of the matter is, okay, this issue of not looking at the Sefer Torah, okay, when it's being raised, is the question is, where's the source for something? Why would you not look at the Sefer Torah? It seems to be something mystical about looking inside the Otiyot of the Sefer Torah. Rabbi Wim, okay, who was a rabbi, and he wrote a very important book on Yochad Midah called Suga B'Shoshanim, which is one of the major books in Yochad Midah, who was a member of the Igah Haredi, has a position, and this seems almost very strange, but if you realize it's mystical, that a woman can hold a Sefer Torah, they can't look at the words themselves. I mean, she's almost in a position, get an idea that she could do Hagba and yet not look at the words. It's a very difficult position. It's almost counterintuitive. I mean, someone would say if it can't look at the Sefer Torah, so you couldn't touch the Sefer Torah. But all I can tell you is, and there are posts who want to argue that way, that the discussion, or come to the discussion, just call it about women holding the Sefer Torah. Okay, just even a bit. But one of the points that we have to begin with in that discussion is this custom that brought the Chai Adam, also quoted in Mishnah Berurah, the women didn't look at the Sefer Torah. By the way, it's also very problematic. Because remember the Pri Chadash, and you'll see that almost all the posting say, why is a woman, even if you hold the stringent school, why is she obligated to daven? After all, the stringent school says you don't daven. Right? How come the Pri Chadash and all the later posts say, you don't care what that means? That we set aside because it's contravening the halacha. You got to daven. You got to daven. You got to say, the mazon. You can't take a minhag which has no source and use it to contravene something that you're obligated to. Yet, interestingly enough, the custom of looking at the Sefer Torah in Hanba is quoted in the Masechet Sofrim, which was essentially a book written certainly after the Talmud period, which states that men and women are obligated to look at the Sefer Torah when it's being picked up. So again, how could this, it's very strange, how could this custom contravene something that seems to be a requirement of when they do happen to look at the Sefer Torah? I don't understand. I must tell you, this is one of the things I don't understand. But anyway, we'll come back to that in a second. Let's continue about this question that a menstruant shouldn't go to the Beit HaKvarot and she went to the mikvah.
Up to
actually get full of, right? Anida. Which means that unmarried women could never, who don't normally go to the mikvah, could never go to the mikvah. Now that's certainly not Minhag America. Right? In America, I don't know what it was, but unmarried women definitely went to the mikvah, definitely went to the mikvah. And in most places in Israel, women went to the Beit HaKvarot. Although there are certain edot in which they women don't go at all. Okay, but let's read that now. The current sphere again. I'm not too sure. Yeah.
The book
Gevin
Uriah, which is just snaps his ball across
the window. Yet forever in my movements.
It states that custom as a law, and a custom that's in Kabbalah even today, and then it goes on to say that even if it causes a woman discomfort, because everyone will know, she still has to stay. He said that about, you know, that and other things, of course. But it was, you know, it was supposed to be one of the laws that all women have to obey.
First of all, it implies that
it's translated to English.
What? She shouldn't do what? She shouldn't do what? To obey their father. So let me just, I don't want to go into the whole discussion because that's really not the matter. Let me just mention, we're going to read now, right now. Number 12. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Turk says, writes, ומה שכתב שם החיי האדם, ונשים לא יקצו לבית הפרון עד שביטו לו. קשה. Doesn't make sense. דעתו יש קדושה יתרה בבית הפרון, לבין הכנסת, בואו לזה, זה שאול על זה. And the bed of the has more sanctity than the bed. In the bed of the Knesset, the Chayim Am Sadek can go. He says that's the minute here. So in the bed of the Knesset, they can't go what has a bed of Kedusha. On the contrary, the bed of the Knesset is more Tuma. Whatever your reason is, this is Avi Avot Tuma. So why it doesn't make sense, right? Ubevadai yesh lem mitzvah l'lavot amed, v'lasot b'tfulato, ubefrat shitir ramah. Especially since the Ramah said what? That even when she's having, even according to strict opinion, in the time of the Yemen Barayim or any similar situation where masses come, they can go to shul because it causes them sadness. So she wants to be the malach of the meds, and it's not going to cause her sadness? Of course it will. Mishum itzavon, kamochen yecholim latir hayom lenashim, afilu be'et riyatan lelech lebet etfarot, ki im yimnu'u lehen, tiyelim itzavon gadol. You tell not to go, it's going to cause them tremendous pain. Sadness, and we see that that's a criterion for allowing it in according to strict position. So, alachat kama bekamas, in many communities, we don't have this custom when mentions do go to shul, so certainly she should go to the Beit HaKavod. Rav Amzel, who was the editor of, I think it's, I can't remember, Rav Amzel put out a Torah journal called Ma'or, and I think he wrote a long tshuva also, stated that the custom, there's no reason not to. There's several other tshuva which might do this one. The statement, I should say that the statement that a woman shouldn't go to the Beit HaKavod is based on a Zohar in Vayakhel. It has nothing to do with, it keeps coming up and again, and usually in the Haredi circles, because the Zohar says that in the Beit HaKavod, the Satan is Marakeh, the Son of Satan is having a free-for-all, and it's a problem, the men will look at the women, and then etc. It has to do with some sort of mystical sneeze concept which is mentioned in Zohar. It's mentioned in Zohar. But it's clear that the minhag in most places in the world, certainly Ashkenazi communities, that women go to the Beit HaKavod, irrespective. Okay, let's read 13 of Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura says, "Hiskima achronim detzlicha letpalav lebeitah." That even if she wants to be strict and not go to shul in her house, tzlicha letpalav lebeitah, lo vorech kol hapachod, uprat bakil hamazon, vikidush shem la Torah. Umedonotenu noagim hete la'olam umevachot umetpalalot. The Mishnah Brura says, "Not even everything is permitted except," Mishnah Brura says, "we don't want to say." The only thing the Mishnah says in our communities that permit everything except looking at the Sefer Torah. That's what he quotes. That seems to be the bottom one. Hold on. All right. Okay, let's read number 15. In the 1700s, there was a very important work written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Shlomo Zalman. Okay? He's called the Bava Tanya. He's called the Bava Tanya. And Shlomo Zalman wrote a redaction of the Shulchan Aruch. This is what he has to do. Shadidutan. Women were no way a certain separation, a sort of purity, so to speak. Not to, look, not to go to shul, not to, when they were mentioned, not to go to shul, not to go to Sefer Torah. The gam yishim and paladim inan omdo b'fnei chavrotem. They normally stand in front of the other women. Umishum minhag, because of the custom, v'kavod osim, okay? The lo mishum isu. They do it because they feel it's proper. It's, I think he's referring to a I don't know, a cleanliness concept, pasta concept. Will be mainly bunam lo nagu lahachmi, and when they do their clean days and when stringent, will be amim no ra'im during the high holidays and mukavot and that. And I said, ah, we may be too tired. Even when the stringent custom, they can go to the shul even while they're menstruating. Kesha'ar nashim ki yalehem itzavon do, because they'll be very sick. I've seen this before. Now he extends it. V'chein kol ki yotzim, is there anything similar to this? Kegon shemasiyad benatz or some zofro. Oh, Bita, or she's marrying off her daughter. Right now there's a Kiddushin shul or something. Oh, she bats my yoledet, or she just gave birth. And there's a Kiddushin honor of her giving the birth in shul. Right? And she's still having a flow. Shalchim lebet ha-knesset ha-chadad shavuot mutar after nida. She can go to shul even though she's in nida. So you see, again, they're extending the custom of the custom of anything that will cause them to say. That was the custom that they didn't go to shul. Okay, skip down to number 18. I'm sorry, you know what, before, go back to 16. The Tarak Yisrael, okay, Tarak Yisrael is all, again one of the major books on the Chok Midah, and he writes as follows. Another example of something that will cause sadness to a woman, V'chein ha-nashim shalchan v'chol shabbat v'beit ha-knesset. The woman goes every shul v'beit ha-knesset, so even in the communities where the menstruants don't go, she can go. Shabbat v'beit ha-knesset, palel mutarim lelech, af kshin midah. וממילא מותרים דווקא להתפלל. רק ייזהרו שלא יסתכל בספר תורה בשעה שמגיעים. They should look at the Sefer Torah when they raise it. Again, it pops up again, but look what he puts in parentheses. משום מנהג וכבוד ולא משום איסור. Now, I must tell you, I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I mean, if he would have said it's a mystical reason, but I asked Rav David Cohen, it was my Rebbe, who was a major post in New York today, in Brooklyn. What's the source of it? He says it's got to be mystical. But if you read the Tanya Yisrael, what? Rabbi David Cohen. If you live in Brooklyn, you know who David Cohen is. In any case, he's unaffiliated. That's very special. Anyway, the very interesting, he is a total dictator from shul. So the Balabatim can't hold anything over. Everything's in his name. And he did it because he's a wonderful human being. He didn't want anybody to have pressure on him. But in any case, I feel very close to him. And when I asked him, how do you explain this? He said, it's got to be But it's, if you look at the Tarak Yisrael, okay, he says right here, Mishum minag v'kavod, v'lo mishum isur. It's like a minag and kavod. They feel dirty, they don't look at the same time. That's how I think what he means. But again, he says, not because there's an isur to look. He says, they don't feel, they feel passionate to it.
How can a woman
get what?
Like
what? Let's not go into that. But theoretically, they're a woman's service. we discussed that long enough. Okay, so in any case, but the point is, he says that there's no Easter of her looking at the Sefer Torah. The women just didn't feel it was proper. That's how he learns. not even as a mystic. Okay. Gam liyizaru shelo yizug dama minay bebet haknesset. Okay, they all should be careful that she doesn't drip in shul. And I know this seems very strange to you, but it's not so strange. You know, you have to realize reality is a change. All right, let's go down to number 18. Okay. Shal tshuvot yabia omer chelek gimel. This is Rabbi Avadi Yosef. What is this? Dafilu b'machmirei. Even according to the stringent school. This is essentially the last source we have on this page. Dafilu b'machmirei. Even according to the stringent school. Yesh lomar, you can say. Deshavi lasot chupot b'vet ha-knesset. You can have a chupot in shul. Now, you have to say, we Ashkenazim have been, there's a whole discussion about having chupot in shul. And a lot of it is not a halach problem, let's say, with having a chupot in shul. It's because the Christians dafka when they had those churches, because it was a sacrament, and therefore they wanted dafka. So when they want to have a dafka, we dafka dope. In America, though, slowly but surely, this attitude changed, and the many synagogues they had it, but the whole catering halls was an attempt to solve the problem. Many communities they had it. Certain Svardim had it. A lot of other Jewish communities had it in shul. Okay, let's not get into this. But in any case, what? They had it. They had it in the catering hall. They had it outside the shul. What? Well, the very early they probably had it in shul. It was the best building to have it in. It's when the Christians made it into the marriage, into a sacrament, then it became a question of b'chukotei lo tilech. Look, let's give an example. Putting flowers on a kever, right? When we came to Israel, we were doubt is not the word, we were appalled is the word. We were appalled. And then I read a tshuva by the Yosef, he says, what do you mean you're appalled? It's mentioned in the Gemara. He says, we sweat and did it all the time. You Ashkenazim stopped doing it because the Christians did a lachis. Right? So you started laughing, but it's mentioned in the Gemara. You can't say something is usher because of the Talekh. We did it all the time. I mean, if Jews wear ties all the time, and they're going to the hachis, decide to wear ties as part of their Christian service. Right? But Jews wearing ties all the time, and Christians decide that they're part of the sacraments, they got to wear ties. Therefore, it becomes us who choose to wear ties. They wear ties all the time. Ashkenazim would probably say, yeah, if Christians are doing it, we're not going to do it. Okay, but that's what it says. He says, that's not how the halacha works. I mean, you know. So, anyway, the point of the matter is that a lot of what goes on is, you know, what you're used to and how things develop historically. So in any case, Avadi Yosef, getting back to the subject, even from the student school in 18 again, yesh lama d'shoyin asal chupah b'vet ha-knesset. You can make chupah in the shul. D'havilei tahi d'mari shehitiru l'midot. Now what is the problem? The problem here is that there's a little coming into the shul will be menstruous. Shehitiru l'midot d'kanes b'vet ha-knesset b'yam no'ayim. It says, look, everybody's coming to shul. Right? And even according to the strict custom, he says, if it's going to cause them sadness, that's perfectly all right. Okay? Because so they're having a chupir. But after appreciation of chalik, even though one could make a distinction, become a kohen. Now here's a question. Kibun she'eino ela minad v'chum rabama, since it's only a custom and an unfounded stringency, betan kol dehu dechinu. For any simple reason, we can say this. I mean, kosher came, didan ha-svaradim, zuri kora ha-svaradim, the Nahigim La'akil La'gamre. After they come to Bet HaKnesset, even they come to Shul, Kudat Marana Bet Yosef, does Lina and Bata Shipuli, we follow the bottom of his country. Wherever he goes, we follow. So he says it's certainly all right. Now, Abad Yosef has fought on a variety of occasions, print, and like, to fight the tendency that's developing was that the Ashkenazi community would start off, you know, strict, is getting more and more and more and more lenient, to the point the Mishnah Berurah says, we do everything except what? That they look at the writing of the Sefer Torah. And the Sfaradim who start off with nothing are getting more and more and more and more strict. And you see Rabbi Yosef is already discussing the problem, and some Sfaradim mentioned the women are being stringent about it. So, that particular issue is something that the Avadya said is attempting to fight battle and not completely successful. Okay. I just want to mention a couple of things. Well, I want to do now, I want to focus in a little bit now on women voting the same time. Okay. Now, we saw that as far as the Shulchan Aruch is concerned, as far as the halacha is concerned, there's no halacha problem with a woman, even with a menstruant, from holding the same. We also saw that the custom of getting more and more and more lenient the Ashkenazi world, and the only thing that's mentioned left, the only thing that's left is according to what the Mishnah Berurah says, is that the women don't look at the Sefer Torah, says the Mishnah Berurah. This is the late 1800s when it's being picked up. Now, some scholars, and I read the responsa on women holding a Sefer, touching a Sefer Torah, holding a Sefer Torah. I should point out that it comes up in a variety of different ways. The question of women holding the Sefer Torah. I'm not talking about in the 1990s. The question of women holding the Sefer Torah. It probably came up in the 1700s, 1800s. Women holding the Sefer Torah. There was this feeling that a woman who had a rough time giving birth, Isha Makashel, that they would bring the Sefer Torah to the room, and they would, in some cases, mention that she would help the Sefer Torah, and that would make her make it easier for her to do it. This comes up several times in the responsa literature. One person says, "How can she hold the Sefer Torah? She's a Nika." There are Jews that say that. How could she hold the Sefer Torah? She's a Nika. Another person said, I don't know what the problem is with the holding Sefer Torah. There's no problem with the Nida holding the Maria Sad, one of the major postings. I don't understand what the problem with the freedom of the holder, a woman holding the Sefer Torah. My problem is, why? How can they bring the Sefer Torah from the shul to her? I mean, there's a problem with Tiltal Sefer Torah. I mean, just that she should feel better, you're going to bring the Sefer Torah. You're not going to carry the Sefer Torah anywhere you want to. The problem of carrying the Sefer Torah outside and dancing with some of the stars is not a trivial problem. It's saying because the whole shul goes out, the minyan goes out, and dancing out. It's not a trivial problem. And we talked about the Sefer Torah and women's prayer groups, we talked about taking the Sefer Torah out and moving the Sefer. That's a major, major problem. So Maria said, I don't have the problem, there's no problem with me holding the Sefer Torah. The problem is, how did they get the Sefer Torah there? Well, that's a problem. Clearly he says, well, if it's Bikur HaNefesh, and it's going to give her strength, and that might be permissible. But if it's Bikur HaNefesh, that's a lot of it. But there were clearly some authorities that said, well, if we still have this custom of not moving, not looking at a Sefer Torah, then she certainly can't hold the Sefer Torah. There are, however, a whole view, and I'm talking about in the modern period, a whole slew of poskim that say that there's no problem at all with women gazing at the Sefer Torah, holding the Sefer Torah. And I'm going to be a name dropper, okay?
Gazing,
looking.
I understand.
Okay, and the names are Rabbi Yehuda Sad, Chaim Sofer, which is the Kafa Chaim, Rav Avadya Yosef, Moshe Malka, Rav Meir Amzel, Rav David Feinstein, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Rav Nachum Lever. All these postings say that nowadays there's no problem whatsoever with a woman holding a Sefer Torah, looking at the Sefer Torah. Rav Yosher Ben Soloveitchik and a whole variety of occasions also made it clear that this is also an opinion. We know that it was against women's prayer groups and public policy grounds, but on the issue of a woman holding the Sefer Torah, that was never a problem. That was not a problem for him. The former British chief rabbi, Emmanuel Jacobowitz, in consultation with his London Besdin, who has a lot of major gedolim on it, writes as follows. On the question of a woman using the Sefer Torah, the consideration you mentioned, that is halachot of nida, can be disregarded. I mean, Jacobus was asked about a woman's prayer group, a woman using a Sefer Torah. He says the problem is not a nida touching a Sefer Torah. That's not a problem for me, he says. The question of using a Sefer Torah, you can use a chumash, that bothers me. But But the fact that a woman holds the sacred Torah is not true. There are other major poskim, also Rav Moshe Feinstein and the famous Tshuva of Kendler also said there's no problem with women looking at the there are other poskim who make it very clear that this custom of not looking at the sacred Torah, that custom that the Mishnah Berurah mentioned, is not in effect anymore. One is Rav Moshe Feinstein, who wrote Mordechai Tengel quotes him saying as follows. Nor is there any real prohibition. This is okay, Mordechai Tengel writing the name of Moshe Feinstein. Nor is there any real prohibition for a menstruant to look at or touch the Torah, even though it is proper to be stringent. There is such a kind of should be. Nachmer says, nevertheless, it has become widespread that women are leaning to this. This is no longer such a thing. I mean, Mishnah Berurah may have mentioned it, but that was in the late 1800s. It's not true. It's not true. The Moshe is writing this in the early 1970s. I had, does anybody who know who's considered the post-age nowadays? Now that the Rambam has passed away, Rabbi Yoshi. Rabbi Yoshi is now considered the post-age post-age. So there's a Ram there's a Ram in Bar Ilan, and he's called Bar Ilan, whose name is Rav Pick, and the Pick asked Rabbi Yoshi for me, and Rabbi Yoshi wrote, said, that menstruating women no longer have the custom of refraining from looking at the telescope. I didn't talk about touching the subject. I didn't have the chutzpah to ask that question. But at least the question of women looking at the sacred Torah, which for many other people is the source of the minig not to touch the sacred Torah, this stuff. And Rishon Yisraeli was, you know, it's very interesting. There's a kollel called Eretz Hanukkah. And they have a service by which you can fast the Mishaila, and within 48 hours, I think, they promise you a chicken. Now this kollel is fantastic. They put out already three volumes of these facts to this. They're called Ma'eh HaBazak. Okay? Bazak is lightning, speed of lightning. So the I don't know what that Ma'eh HaBazak. Anyway, he was at Rav Shaul Yisraeli, the head of the Eretz Chanda was Rav Shaul Yisraeli Zatzal, who passed away not long ago. And Rav Shaul Yisraeli was asked by a community in Karlsruhe, Germany. They take the Sefer Torah back, it goes along, very similar to us, they go back along the Mechitza. Is there any problem with the women coming over and kissing the Sefer Torah? So we have Shaul Yisraeli says, testifies that it is the custom of Israeli women to kiss the Sefer Torah, irrespective of whether or not they are menstruants, and has ruled that the same is appropriate for the community in Karlsruhe. Okay. So now you have in America, Moshe Feinstein testifying, and you have Yoshiv in Israel, and you have Shaul Yisraeli moving also from Karlsruhe, Germany. Essentially, you have that there is no custom looking at the Sefer Torah. Is no custom kissing the sacred Torah. As I mentioned, I've asked around, and I keep asking that any woman know that any women who don't kiss the Zuzim when they, you know, when they go, that they don't kiss the sacred Torah. So it's Torah, because they need that. There ain't no such minute. Okay? At least it doesn't seem to exist. Now, I'm not being completely fair. There exists a whole literature in the Haredi community. Hungarian to the right. Well, of course it's and since it's recorded that in the 1700s, they didn't do it. So the flow of time essentially stops with some sort. So they didn't do it, they don't do it. And they say it's us, and they still don't like the first community, and they have all the leniencies. The Oredeansi is the one that came. Orion was sad that they'll use it. But it's clear that as we're dealing with the general Orthodox, we call modern Orthodox, or Aguda communities as well, you ask them what the halacha of Yoshev is a from Jew, and Shaul Yisraeli. And these are, we're talking about first-rate post-game yeshiva community. They say there is no such limit anymore, at least in the Litvisha. That for Yeshivish communities, there isn't such minig anymore. That we don't look at the same time, kiss the same time when they're done. So the issue, it would seem, that the issue of a woman certainly touching the Sefer Torah is not a problem. Okay, women holding a Sefer Torah doesn't seem to be a major problem. There may be a lot of resistance for a whole variety of other reasons, but not because of these nida considerations. There are a whole variety of testimonies of women who carried Sefer Torah from America to Israel. They carried Sefer Torah. I don't know the whole documentation. Also, the women who did it, and they were told by the rabbis. In one particular case that I documented, she said that the rabbi knew about this.
More than welcome to keep your handouts, but if you want to return them, please do that.